All right. Well, thanks very much. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks, Mark, for chairing the session and being here instead of at the talk you probably really want to see in another room. Talking about this, and I have to be honest, if I saw this in a book of abstracts at the ASA meeting, I'd probably say, you know, I'm tired of that conversation. I'd rather go hear something else. But hopefully you'll see I'm not really talking about this question. Well, I talk about it a little bit. Before I get started, I'm just kind of curious of who's here. So quick straw poll, if you just wave your hand. I'm curious, if you teach at a secular college or university, great. A very Christian college or university, okay? Like, you know what I mean, you know what I mean? A nominal Christian college or university, okay? A few of you, great, thank you. If you're a scientist at industry, government lab, couple non-scientists, great. And also slicing along a different axis, chemists, handful of chemists, physicists, great, good, good. Geologists, any geologists? Good, couple of you, great. Biology, wow. You're going to be really disappointed, sorry. Mind science and social science? Any? Okay, wow, we ran them off. Engineers, see a few engineers in the room, great. And any others? Some other science I didn't mention, humanists, humanities people, all right. Very good, thank you very much, that's helpful. Helpful for me. Oh, also, yeah, theology, ministry, pastors, great, thank you. Okay, my background, just to be totally clear about what you should believe and what you should not believe of what I'm going to say in the next 15 minutes or so. My formal training was in chemical reaction dynamics using techniques borrowed from like physics beam experiments to study chemical reactions under single collision conditions. Right now, I've kind of transitioned into interfacial chemistry, looking at molecules in solutions sticking to glass. So I should I should probably be giving a talk about one of those two, but I teach undergraduate physical chemistry. What I'm going to be talking about today is something I do in two different classes. One is junior pre-med chemistry majors. So I've got one class is that. It's kind of their physical chemistry, thermodynamics. The other is cross-listed with a physics thermo. So it's the chemists who are going to grad school and also the physics students who we cross-list that at my institution. I am not, just to be totally upfront here, I am not a specialist in thermodynamics other than what happens in an undergraduate physical chemistry classroom. I briefly considered a postdoc in non-equilibrium thermodynamics, but that was like an afternoon 25 years ago. Okay, so for the purposes of today, I am primarily an educator. So if I say something that offends your sensibilities of non-equilibrium thermodynamics, feel free to call me on it when we're done. If I say something that offends you as an educator, feel free to call me on that as well. Okay, my context, I teach at Westmont College. Do I have a laser pointer? Yeah, look at this. That right there, that's my office right there. You can see it. I got the best, even though I'm one of the newest people in the department, I got the best, Andy's seen it. He knows I've got the best office. I got the best office because the other guy who really should be in the office couldn't be bothered to move all his books from the office without windows to my office that has awesome windows overlooking some beautiful stuff. We have 1,200 students. That is a hard cap on us imposed by our neighborhood. Santa Barbara is draconian in their land use policies. I don't know if any of you work under circumstances like that. So we cannot have more than 1,200 students on campus. At any given time, we have another 100 students off campus studying abroad. We graduate 12 chemistry majors a year. About 9 of them are in kind of a biochem pre-medi track. It's a BS in chemistry, emphasis in biochem. Another 3 or 4 are thinking of grad school or something else. So that's the split between the intro thermo class that I do this assignment in, and then just a few with a few physics students in the more upper division. We're liberal arts college, nationally ranked, undergraduate only. And it's hard these days, by the way, to maintain an only undergraduate liberal arts focus. Many of you who kind of raise your hands who said, yeah, I'm in Christian college, will know that that squeeze. And it's really our hard cap of 1,200 students that has forced us to maintain, to only do one thing. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse. Mostly Christian students. I would guess 80% of our students come from evangelical homes. The next most would probably be Roman Catholic, and a very few students. I had a Sikh student, so we do not require our students to sign a statement of faith, but we do require our faculty. So our faculty all sign an evangelical statement of faith. We do not hire Roman Catholics. So the faculty is evangelical, students mostly so. I poll my students in a freshman chemistry class in a different activity, and about 40% of them, I ask them, you know, at school I was taught, at home I was taught, or at church I was taught that the earth is about 10,000 years old. And about 40% of our students will check yes to one of those. Interestingly, home is the least common checked box. Church, I think, is the next least common checked box, and school is the most common checked box. So I think we have a lot of kids in Young Earth school, or who hear Young Earth creationism at school, but not at church or home, which I think is kind of interesting. I don't know, Faith, what do you think?
Do you know if those are private schools?
Or yeah. I'm sure those are kids in private Christian schools, and who go to church, and who are from a Christian family, but they only hear Young Earth creationism at school. I don't know. That's not a scientific survey. It's just kind of anecdotally. Okay, so before we have a diverse group here, so I thought I would do a little bit on the science. The question that I pose in the assignment to my students in the title of my talk is evolution contradicted by the second law of thermodynamics. So I'll do a little science on the second law just in case it's new to you. I'll do an infinitesimal amount of science on evolution. And then I'll get into the assignment that I actually assign my students, and I'll tell you what they find, and then what I have found through my assigning this assignment. It's kind of some, I've had some surprise. So a couple historical statements of the second law. It is not possible to move heat from a cold place to a hot place without something else happening. So if you're going to move some heat from inside your fridge out into your kitchen, it can't happen without there being some effect somewhere else in the world, probably at a natural gas burning power plant, as we learned this morning. Another one, it is not possible to convert 100 joules of heat into 100 joules of work. Energy is conserved. This obeys the law of conservation of energy, but we still never see this happen. It cannot happen. You know, something else would happen. Another 20 joules or 50 joules or another 100 joules would have to happen somewhere else in order to turn 100 joules of heat into work. These are both kind of interesting in that they're statements of impossibility. We never observe this. And these were found by people with like water wheels and paddles and lowering weights. Okay. That's kind of where these things were discovered. In science, sometimes we discover something historically and we make this very lab-like observation. There's the law, it's discovered. But then we abstract it, and we invent words like entropy, and then we can state the law mathematically and maybe a little more concisely, but it's not quite, it's much more abstract. It's harder to connect to labs. So what is entropy in order to state the second law in a little more rigorous sense than on the last slide? I need a careful definition of entropy. There's two really common definitions of entropy. One is the thermodynamic definition of entropy. It says, how much heat do you dump into something at what temperature? So entropy is S, dumping heat into something at a given temperature. And right from there, if you're careful, you can see that those two previous statements on the previous slide really are consequences of this right away. There's also a statistical definition of entropy, which is kind of related to how many ways can something happen. So this omega here is sort of how many ways can something happen. I'll give an example. If you're going to toss, trying to picture my future slide here. I think I did 8 dimes. If you have 8 dimes and you flip them, there is only one way to get all heads, and that is for them all to come up heads. There are, so here we go. There, I flipped 8 dimes and I got 8 heads in a row. I didn't, actually. The next one, okay, this next one, I'm not kidding. I really told Excel, make up random numbers, and then tell me if a coin would come up heads or tails based on the random numbers, and I got this. Okay, I only did it once, and it actually worked. So I'm like, I got head, tail, head, head, tail, head, tail, tail. There are lots of ways to get half heads and half tails. Okay, this, how many different ways are there of getting this macro state of half heads and half tails? How many micro states, heads, tails, heads, heads, tails, heads, tails, tails? This is the number of ways that you could get that one observation. So that's also a definition of the entropy. And because of that one, frequently entropy is called disorder, or it's called randomness, because that's kind of what it looks like. That's how it strikes us sometimes as people. Okay, so now that we have a definition of entropy, we can go back to the second law. The entropy of an isolated system can only stay the same or increase. If you've done some thermo, entropy is kind of weird. It is a state function, but it is not conserved. The entropy of the universe tends toward a maximum, is another way. And if you've heard the second law, you probably heard this. Now, we can have the entropy of something, of some part of the world. It can go up or down. It can get more organized, if you will, if somewhere else, if the entropy is going up even more. But if we take the whole box, everything combined, so I can call the sum of the system and the surroundings an isolated system, or I can call it the universe, that is only going to stay the same or go up, everything in the box. Okay. So there's the first piece of science, first half of my question. Second, what is evolution? Sorry, biologists. The way my students usually approach this, okay, the way most of the papers my students find, the way that the papers approach this is going from Earth with no biosphere to Earth with a biosphere. Okay, huge, all the biologists are like, no, it's so much more than that. I guess one thing that it's not, is Earth with a full Earth, you know, with 1,000 species becoming a full Earth, you know, and maybe some number of organisms, turning into a full Earth with the same number of organisms and 1,001 species. Okay, one more. That's not really what we're talking about. But I think that a lot of what we find and what we're going to talk about also applies to that kind of other sense. I'm also not talking about planetary evolution. I'm not talking about origin of life, going from nothing, no self-replicating molecules to one self-replicating molecule. I'm sort of looking at it at this level, but really I think the definition of evolution that we use isn't going to matter so much. You can call me on this later if you want. Maybe somebody's going to want to talk about that. Okay, so what I want to tell you today is what I do in my class with that background. It's a thermodynamics class. It's an upper division chemistry or physics requirement. I tell my students, imagine that you have been asked, with your Christian liberal arts education, you have been asked by a church or a religious organization to serve as their science advisor. Okay? They've heard some stuff out there, and they want you to help them. They want to know, does this second law of thermodynamics contradict the theory of evolution? Okay, they've heard this. Maybe somebody in the church has brought this up. And for whatever reason, they want to know. They have asked you for a position paper. They want you to draft a position paper for their organization or for their church. So it's kind of a role-playing assignment for my students. And I've yet to have students kind of roll their eyes at this point. This is usually, I haven't taken any data on this. I haven't polled them on what do you think about this assignment. But they're usually fairly, they're like, oh, that sounds interesting. That sounds like something, maybe it wouldn't really happen, but it's not entirely outside the realm of possibility. And they see it as relevant. So a few details on the assignment. I say for this paper, the church hasn't asked you for this, but I am strongly encouraging you to find at least 2 possible answers to the question. And I don't say what they have to be. It could be yes and no could be your answers. It could be yes because this or yes because this. It could be no because this, no because this. I don't specify. I say you need to find 2 different answers to the question. You need to take sides on that. And or I rather, I say you need to give a recommendation based on that. And I say you need to find at least 5 reputable sources. And I help them out a little bit with what a reputable source is. I say it has to be peer reviewed. Sort of somebody would lose their job if it was wrong. Okay, something like that. And I say they can use non-peer reviewed sources. They can use websites. They can use whatever they find is great, but they need 5 reputable sources. They might have, 5 reputable sources and 3 websites, and that's great. That's great. Okay, my goals, maybe you can infer from the way I've set this up. Clearly, I want to encourage faith science reflection. Okay, that's why I do the assignment. That's the main reason. Some of you may have known Art Holmes personally, a philosopher at Wheaton College, I think, who's generally attributed to have started this talk of integration of faith and learning. I have a colleague who had a personal conversation with him where he apparently said that his use of integration is frequently misunderstood, and what he was getting at really was contribution. What contribution does faith make to science? And what contribution does science make to faith? Integration isn't quite so clear as that. So I was trying to think, can these students with their training in thermodynamics contribute anything to the life of the church? And can their reflection on faith contribute anything, maybe only motivational, into their pursuit of study of thermodynamics? I also want to encourage service to the church. Our students... the church isn't a very big deal for our students. It's kind of this, maybe a vestigial thing that is still around. And I do want to get them thinking as people who are committed to the church and who will serve it, and maybe even use their science to serve it. I also want to encourage irenic thinking about a controversial issue. I'm very clear that in the 2 positions they describe, I say that they must, if the one they disagree with, they must describe that position in terms that someone who supported that position would agree with their characterization. A former colleague at another institution, a philosopher, that was his definition of civility. Civility is not mischaracterizing someone else's position. That you need to describe it where if they read your paper, they say, yeah, that's what I think about entropy and evolution. So I do want to encourage this, really loving your neighbor, I think, in that sense, not mischaracterizing someone else's argument, even if they're going to mischaracterize yours. I also want to direct them to the primary literature. This is one of the only things I do in any of my classes that actually gets students digging in the databases and looking up papers in the physics literature. Okay, so the answers. Now, when you saw my title in the program book, you probably immediately thought you know the answer and you know the reason, right? Duh. Does the second law of thermodynamics contradict the theory of evolution? No. Okay, it doesn't, because, obvious reason, we have a sun, okay? And if the system surrounding things, so this is the first obvious thing that maybe many of my students could come up with, even if they don't, so everybody's like breathing a sigh of relief, like, okay, good, I'm so glad you said that. The sun is an essentially limitless source of energy, so the Earth is not an isolated system, and so the second law really doesn't apply unless you're going to somehow also include the sun in your consideration. We can't just look just right here. As an example here, here I've got a big black box and I'm pumping carbon dioxide and water into this box. And out come 3 beautiful children. You might have seen this guy Friday night. He was around. He's a little bigger than that. And you think, wait, that violates the second law. Because I'm turning these things, which have a bazillion microstates, okay, so many ways we can partition energy among the available quantum states here. This is much more restricted maybe not this guy. He's much more restricted into the number of ways you can arrange microstates. I left the sun off my picture. If I shine the sun into the box, and you might be thinking, boy, that doesn't look possible. And most of the websites my students find that would say yes to this question, they would say yes really to this as well. I think you would almost have to say yes, this is a violation of the second law. Because I think the arguments usually are equivalent to this. What you don't know is that inside the box is a farm and my wife and I. And then once you see that, it's like, oh yeah, that can happen. We can put the sun in, carbon dioxide and water in, and children can pop out over here. We can ask the biologists about that later. By the way, it is my anniversary, so it's very fitting that today I would put up a picture of this. Okay, so what do that's the obvious answer, so you can all breathe easily, that this talk is appropriate for an ASA meeting. What do students find? Does the second law of thermodynamics contradict the theory of evolution? They find, one of their surprises is that almost no one out there is saying yes. I'll ask them when I hand out these assignments, I say, have any of you heard this argument? You might be surprised how few of them have. I think even of the 40% young Earth creationists, maybe only half of them have heard this. So even for us, this may be something of a straw man assignment. Like very few people are making this, and that's a little bit of a surprise to my students. They do find some Institute for Creation Research websites, essays on there. Couple books might have a few paragraphs on this. But it's not really a big deal out there. And then they find lots of physics articles that say no. And I'm sure this doesn't surprise you. What surprised me is that those physics articles, I haven't read all the papers that my students find. I don't give them articles, I just set them loose. And I say, you've got to find 5 reputable sources. And what I've learned, and what surprised me, is that there's actually a lot of papers out there from physicists answering this question, saying no, and then when they get into the reasons, there's some divergence, which is kind of interesting. I thought that was kind of fascinating. I'd like to do a little bit more, but it almost seems to me as though some of their reasons are mutually exclusive, that I don't think they can all be right in their reason for their answering no. And here's 3 that I'll give you. One that I've come across, that my students have come across, and I'm getting this sort of filtered through my students here. No, evolution provides a pathway that maximizes the rate of entropy production. Okay? That evolution is really making things that are better at metabolism and somehow that's actually increasing the entropy of the universe even faster than before we had all these different ways of doing things on Earth. Frankly, I'm not sure I buy that. That seems a little bit incredible in kind of the literal sense of the term. But my students do find that out there in literature. No, because no step in the mechanism for evolution violates the second law. And so the overall process of evolution. So, for example, mutations, selection of the fittest, okay, no problem in any of those steps as far as the thermodynamics is concerned. And so if we can get speciation through those processes, no problem. I sort of buy that one, I guess, personally. I was going to try and avoid saying how much I think about this. This one's actually really interesting, and this one's kind of intriguing. I'm not really sure. Anybody familiar? I know one of you is. There's a paper by Steyer in the American Journal of Physics. The title is the same as mine. So this is from a guy named Steyer, and he says the entropy of the surroundings is so big. Okay, the sun. Anything can happen, and he actually gets quantitative on this. It's a fun little back of the envelope physics. Physics exercise here. So in this answer of not really, this is Steyer's estimate. By doing some real hand-wavy, back-of-the-envelope evolution guesses of like how much DNA needs to change to get a new species, how often do new species come up, okay, just crazy things like this, he estimates that the entropy of the biosphere decreases by 300 joules per Kelvin per second. Okay, and for a chemist in the room, you might say like, oh, that's kind of big, but for a whole planet, that's not very much, right? That a typical chemical reaction is going to have maybe 10 joules per Kelvin per mole, which would fit in your hand for most chemicals. So to have 300 joules per Kelvin per second for the whole planet, That's pretty small. Okay, so basically evolution is happening slowly. If you take our sun, the entropy involved in our having a sun is 420 times 10 to the 12 joules per Kelvin. And this is the fun back of the envelope. Both of these are fun back of the envelope physics calculations. This one, he takes the temperature of the sun. Charles can help him out with that. The temperature of the surface of the sun, how much heat comes to us from that temperature at the temperature of the Earth. So my dQ over T equation. And then you take the temperature of the Earth and you dump that same amount of heat back off into the cosmic microwave background of 2.7 Kelvin or whatever. And the flux of entropy through the Earth is 420 times 10 to the 12 joules per Kelvin per second. So you look at this number, pretty small compared to that number. You say, okay, anything can happen, given that huge, huge flux of entropy through us. Now, what I'm not sure about is he saying that evolution does not obey the second law, but it's within the expected range of fluctuations? The second law kind of assumes the most likely thing is the only thing you're ever going to see. But given numbers like this, like, well, maybe we're just like the next most likely thing. So maybe, and Steyer does not say this, and I'm not sure it's something that could be drawn from these numbers, but maybe we're just not a statistically surprising fluctuation away from the second law. We're close enough, right? We're close enough. So that's kind of the not really. So the three answers, I've just given you three answers that my students find in the no section. Take home messages then from this. Faith integration assignments can be scientifically rigorous. Most of the faith integration I had done before this paper was pretty fluffy, you know, pretty reflect on this, or why would, you know, a Christian think about this in this way. They weren't having to look up or think about a number of 420 times 10 to the 12 joules per Kelvin. But this one, they're reading physics papers that are kind of hard to read. In a context where they can imagine that it might be relevant for their faith even. You might learn something too from an assignment like it's been kind of interesting to see. I did not realize that people were disagreeing on the reason that the answer would be no. Everybody agrees, well, we have a sun, so there's no point in talking about it. But when you drill down from that, there's kind of an interesting conversation out there. With that, I'm happy to take any questions. And I do have a few copies of the actual assignment and the rubric that I used for grading this, if anybody's interested in that.
One other aspect, it's the net increase of entropy has to increase, the net. So it can increase in some places and decrease in others, but
yeah.
The net has to increase.
Right.
So you can see where it's decreasing, where things are being organized.
Right. Yes, right. And that's where that 420 times 10 to the 12, if that's coming to us from the sun and then we're dumping it off to the cosmic microwave background, well, I guess we're increasing the cosmic microwave background more than 300 joules per Kelvin.
I think maybe the reason you thought the rate of entropy increase argument holds was because that's kinetics.
Yeah.
Q in your equation is Q reversible.
Yes.
And it's referring to an equilibrium process. So these arguments having to do with rate of entropy increase don't have anything to do with the second
law. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. In fact, I have a hard time thinking about non-equilibrium thermodynamics, but yeah, that thing of being, well, that's just a kinetic argument, and thermodynamics just tells us what's possible, it doesn't say what's actually going to happen.
Or how fast.
Right, sure. The man who taught me physics, by the way. He can't be blamed for anything.
I get some mail, which I consider spam, that has been arguing about, because I don't bother to look it up, but is have you run across this?
Yes.
Is that related to Steyer's paper?
I think so, yeah.
I think I know Steyer.
Oh, really?
From Oberlin?
I think so, yeah. I get the same spam. And I'm sure I'm going to get more now that I've go ahead.
Thinking of the analogy of somebody building a house. Somebody who builds a house will never violate the second law.
Right. Yeah, so he said that somebody building a house doesn't violate the second law of thermodynamics, but it looks like. Yeah, so this is something where people, you know, the websites that my students find on the yes answer, you know, they'll say, oh, you never have a tornado come through and build an airplane. And then the scientists will pick that apart and say, well, you know, for various reasons. Yeah, Jack.
In the Anderson River, heat is already in flux. You can't move up an amount of heat. It's thermal energy in transition. So you can't say, I've got a quantity of heat.
Right.
I think you use that term slightly less than rigorously.
Okay, yeah, so heat, yeah, the way that heat transferred from the sun to the earth, and then heat transferred from the earth to the cosmic microwave background.
I knew you knew that.
Yeah, okay. Sorry about misspoken. Yeah.
I'm curious if any of your students have used their assignments in their church or someplace else.
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. You know, one, I have one paper that is maybe worth commenting on that was fascinating. Is the student said, really nice description of this literature, really nice description of this literature. And at the bottom said, my recommendation for you, church board, is don't take a position on this. She said, we have better things to do. Like, let's just stay out of that conversation and focus on other things. I thought that was really, really interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
What was your best paper that defended yes?
Best paper that defended yes? That's a great question. Very few of my students do defend the yes. So I've only had one or two, and they haven't been very good. Yeah, I can't, I'd have to think. I mean, I do recall one that was fairly thoughtful, but I can't remember their argument. I can't remember the argument. So, yeah. Well,
yeah, Billy Krigsmaier got the Nobel Prize for his work in irreversible thermodynamics.
Yes.
He would have given his first answer.
Yes.
As David Gregg pointed, I think in the sense that evolution optimizes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my students definitely cite him. Yeah, very true.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.